session number 9434, reel 1.
Mr. Bill Collins, reel 1. I wonder if you could tell me when and where you were born, Mr. Collins.
Yes, I was born at Croydon, South Croydon, number 9 Junction Road, South Croydon.
And what was the date?
14th of June, 1894.
Could you tell me a little bit about your family?
Well, my father and mother were ordinary English people, really Saxon, fair-haired, blue-eyed, and just ordinary working people.
What was your father's job?
My father was a scaffolder, you know, erecting scaffolds for buildings in the old-fashioned way of poles in tubs and knotted together by strong ropes, for which he had a special scaffold hammer.
Was that a regular employment?
It was employment which he had when it was available. When it wasn't available, he turned to the general part of building.
What sort of background did you think you had? Was it well off, comfortable, or?
We were the poorer class, you know, the labouring class.
Can you remember anything about your home life? Food and clothing.
Everything was difficult, you see. I remember my father was in a trade when, if it rained, the whistle blew and they stopped and they were paid hourly. So, of course, the income was not steady. It was fluctuating throughout the year.
How would you cope during the more difficult times?
Well, we just coped, you see. That was in those days, people just coped. They adjusted their living and the amount of food they had according to the circumstances.
Did you get enough food to eat?
Barely.
What sort of education did you have?
Well, I went to St Andrew's Church School when I was seven. And before that, I was at a smaller school near a home for younger children.
What sort of education would you describe it as?
Pardon?
What sort of education was it?
Well, it was good of its kind. The schoolmaster at St Andrews, Mr Locke, was an excellent teacher, and his wife, who assisted him, she was also very good. And there, it was one in that at that school was one of the earliest places where hot milk was provided at 11 o'clock in the morning for pupils such as myself, who might need it to keep them going through the morning.
And what sort of academic level was it at?
Well, it was an ordinary fourth, fifth, sixth standard education, but nothing very posh, you know, very ordinary, just the 3 R's, so to speak.
No, so you left. There was no question of any further education.
Oh, none whatever. No.
And so you left when you were, I believe, 11 years,
nine months of age. That's right.
So what job did you go to?
I went to a tea specialist and worked on a tea packing machine. What? And did other odd jobs around the shop.
What can you remember about that job?
Well, I remember that it was very dusty. A cloud of yellow dust used to come from the machine where the tea was pouring down into the packets, you see. It was automatically weighed. And we just fastened, there were two of us, we just fastened the tops of the packets. Nothing very interesting, but it gave me my first holiday.
How?
The owner of the shop, after I'd been there 6 months, sent me down to the Isle of Wight for a week's holiday at his own expense, which, of course, was most welcome and helped me to get back some strength, which I had lost in the dusty machine room.
So the actual conditions of work affected your health?
Well, not only slightly. You see, a week down at the seaside soon put it straight again, and I didn't go back into the machine again.
What did you do then?
Well, I worked in general jobs around the shop, you know, weighing out sugar and all sorts of things.
So this was a tea and grocery store?
Tea and grocery, yes.
Now, you did that from round about 1906-07 to 1909.
That's it.
And then you went to a gardening job.
I went to a gardening job, yes.
How did you... What made you change?
Well, it made me... I wanted an open-air job, you see. And, of course, jobs of any sort in those days were very hard to get. It was a period of very high unemployment, just as every bit as bad as it is today. And I fancied the idea of working in the open air.
So how did you actually get this gardening job?
Well, I got it through my Sunday school teacher, who was the daughter of a retired clergyman, and she employed me in her garden. And from there I went on to a larger place where they kept a full-time gardener and worked under him, and two successive jobs after that in other places where I worked under gardeners, all very good men.
What was the sort of daily routine of work as a gardener?
Well, the daily routine is one went started at 7 o'clock in the morning and worked until half past four in the afternoon. Just worked in the garden according to the season of the plants, you see.
How did you get on with your employers? Did you see much of them?
Exceptionally well, exceptionally well. They were very kind to me.
Now, you did this until 1913, I believe.
Until the end of August 1913, when I decided that I would want to go somewhere, you see, where life was a bit more certain, and I've always fancied joining the army and joining the Royal Army Medical Corps, in which my uncle had served in the South African War.
What was it about the Royal Army Medical Corps, besides your uncle? What attracted you to the physiology
side of it. The human body. I was always interested physically in my own body. I kept myself fit. And I decided that I would like to follow in my uncle's footsteps because he used to tell me of what happened in the South African War.
Had you had any experience with any of the organisations with military tinges, like the Scouts or the Church Lads
Brigade?
Yes,
I was in the Church Lads Brigade as a small boy.
Before we go on to the army, could you tell me about your involvement in the Church Lads Brigade? Then?
Well, I joined up with a friend of mine. And I wasn't in it very long, about 18 months, you see, when he went to France to join a racing stable as an apprentice jockey. And that split up our friendship, so to speak, and partnership. He went to France and I left the Church Lads Brigade.
What did you do in the church? What was the sort of activity they...
Nothing, just marching, drilling. I was very young. I was only, eight or nine years of age.
So this was while you were still at school?
Yes, still at school, yes.
Did you enjoy the drilling? And
yes, I liked it, like, very much indeed, yes.
Did that encourage you with your aspirations to join the army later?
Yes, definitely, yes, yes.
But how did you go about joining the Royal Army Medical Corps?
Well, one day I walked down to the barracks at Mitcham Road, Croydon, which was the headquarters of the First Queen's Royal West Surrey Regiment, and took the shilling.
What was the actual procedure?
The procedure was I saw the recruiting sergeant, told him I wanted to join the army. He was sitting at his table, and he said, "Yes, what do you want?" I said, "I want to join the Royal Army Medical Corps." He tried to persuade me to join the local infantry battalion, but I said, no, my uncle was in. This is a family corps, you see. And anyway, I joined and went to Aldershot almost immediately.
Did they have a medical inspection or other tests?
Yes, I was medically examined, told that my teeth weren't too good by the doctor, but they've lasted me until I am now nearly 93. And that was the only thing I think that he wasn't accurate about. He said I was fit, physically fit. I was quite a good specimen of a young man.
Did you have to take any tests for your mental skills, any examination?
No, but I had to have at the Depot Royal Army Medical Corps, they wrote to my last employer for a reference to my character and to my... what I was doing.
So that was the procedure at Croydon?
Yes.
You weren't issued with a uniform or anything there?
No.
So how you were sent to Aldershot?
I went to Aldershot, was issued with a uniform there.
Well, could you take me through your arrival at Aldershot? What was the procedure as a
new crew? We arrived there and we were put into barracks, still in our civilian clothes, you see. And the next day we were paraded to the corps tailor and fitted out with uniforms, which he altered to make sure that they fitted properly, you see. Khaki uniforms. And
you got more than one.
And we had a full dress uniform, you see. We were fitted out with a khaki uniform and a full dress uniform. And I paid about 4 visits to the tailor to have minor alterations done to make the uniform fit and be attractive.
You say you got a full dress. What was the full dress uniform?
The full dress was blue and red, slight red, and nothing much else, you see, and a cap, a service dress cap.
What happened after the uniform was issued?
Well, we settled down to steady parades and drill. We started off on the square under a drill sergeant, but only a small squad, learning how to left turn, to right turn, to stand easy, to attention, to stand at ease, and to salute. That was the preliminary training of the soldier, you see. And after that, we got on to short marching, you know, taught how to halt, how to left turn, right turn, and so on. The preliminary steps of an infantryman's drill.
How did you respond to drill?
I liked it. And the tuition was exceptionally good. Sergeant Mackay was my instructor, a Scotsman, very good.
Now, this drilling, now, was that all you did initially?
Initially, yes. All we did was drill.
When did you move on to other aspects of your training?
Well, we moved on almost straight away to sort of platoon drill, and then company drill, you see.
Could you explain the difference?
Yes, the difference, you see, you move by platoon. In those days, you used to have to form fours. Nowadays, they form threes. But we used to have to form fours, and of course do formation drills, and they used to do it to music. At the left on the halt on the left form platoon, at the halt on the left form platoon. If the odd numbers don't mark time two paces, how the hell can the rest form platoon? That was very often the drill sergeant's injunction to us, you see, to do a platoon drill properly.
He'd actually sing that?
We actually used to sing it, yes. He used to sing it out. We didn't sing it, but he used to sing out the instruction. Very, very good.
What about company drill? How did that go?
Company drill was the same as any infantry company. It was the same as any ordinary infantry regiment's company drill, you know. By platoons, and then company. Everything was the same.
And how long did this period of drill training take?
3 months. 3 months. Three to four. Then, of course, we were drilling always afterwards. There were always parades of some sort where this drill came in.
Did you do anything to get you into physical condition? Did you do either PT or route marches?
Oh, yes. We had PT down at the gymnasium, regular PT instructors. My instructor was a corporal of the Highland Light Infantry, excellent fellow. And by the time he'd finished with us, we used to do Swedish drill, exercises, breathing, everything. We were as fit as fiddles by the time he'd finished with us.
What about route marches? Did you do
route marches? Yes, we always had route marches of 6, 7, 8, sometimes 10 miles.
Was that with full kit?
No, that was with no kit at all. Just ordinary, just marching drill.
What was the procedure of a route march? Would you have set rest intervals? Or
yes, you'd do every hour, you'd have five or 6 minutes rest.
Did you sing while you were on the marches?
Oh, yes, yes. Of course we did. Used to sing all sorts of songs. Of course, mind you, Tipperary was being sung long before the war broke out, although it achieved its main popularity immediately after the war broke out. It was being sung before the war broke out.
Do you remember any of the other songs you'd sing before the war?
No, I don't remember. That's the one I remember. The only one I can remember. The others, I don't remember.
Did you have any other infantry training? I'm thinking of rifles.
Yes, we were fully trained with the rifle and bayonet. And we had to fire a course at the ash ranges. I fired my course after the usual infantry training drill with the rifle, you know, and what we used to call poking drill. That's aligning the rifle on an object. And then the drill sergeant would check the sighting to see if your eyesight was good. And then we fired our course at the ash ranges at 300 and 500 yards. And if a man did not pass that firing test, he was put back for further training. And if eventually he couldn't come up to the required standard, he was given a discharge.
You obviously passed it.
I passed it, yes, first time. I hit the ball at 300 and 500 yards.
Were you taught, as well, the pre-war army, we often hear about the rapid rate of fire. Were you taught any exercises to speed up the rate of fire as well as the accuracy?
No. We just fired the course, you know. I don't remember having any course at what you call rapid firing. The object of the exercise to me, as I remember it, was to see that we could shoot accurately in our own time.
Why do you think as RAMC you were taught?
Because, the Geneva Convention precluded the RAMC and similar units from carrying arms. But if we were into a country where the rules of the Geneva Convention didn't run, then of course we would be armed with a rifle and bayonet to protect the wounded.
What about rifle maintenance? Were you taught how to keep your rifle in condition?
Yes, we were taught that.
Can you remember what sort of...
Well, we were taught to, keep the barrels oiled, to keep the rifle in good condition. The rifle was the Lee Enfield rifle, short Lee Enfield, and we were taught to keep it in proper condition.
Well, you mentioned bayonet drill. How were you taught bayonet
drill? Well, the bayonet drill was very restricted. It was mainly in fixing and returning the bayonet to its scabbard. We didn't do any attacking bayonet drill, you see. It was defensive.
Did you do any other infantry training in the sense of either trench digging practice or tactical exercises? Would you do any of that?
Oh yes, we were on manoeuvres. You know, we used to have we were out on manoeuvres, and as a matter of fact, in June of 1914, we were out on manoeuvres simulating warfare conditions. You see, and we were taught to behave and to look after her. We slept out and taught to behave as if in war conditions.
What was your role in these manoeuvres? Can you remember?
Well, just an ordinary stretcher bearer, that's all. Just a stretcher bearer.
How did they simulate the battles and the action?
Well, actually, the simulation of the casualties didn't take place on the manoeuvres. That took place in a competition on the barrack square.
Ah, we'll come to that later.
Yes. Yeah,
so, you during the first three... This was all going on in the first 3 months that you were taught these basic infantry techniques of rifle shooting?
Oh, no. The second... That was after the first... No, none of that occurred in the first 3 months. The first 3 months were confined to drill on the square, you see? But mind you, of course, the bayonet business, that was included in the drill. But the training to with simulated casualties came later on. None of that happened in the first 3 months.
Right. Let's move on now to your actual training in medical affairs. I believe you had medical classes.
Yes.
Could you explain in some detail what exactly training you were given in these?
Yes. There was a building. We used to march off the morning parade. It was the class squad, you see, and we used marched off as a class, saluted the adjutant, the sergeant in charge saluted the adjutant, Sergeant Pigeon, and we marched off to this building, where we assembled in a room, with a blackboard and easel, and the medical officer Captain Benson and Sergeant Partridge, not Pigeon, he was called Pigeon Partridge. Sergeant Partridge, he was the demonstrator with the blackboard of the body, the arteries, the bones, etc., which we were to be taught. We were given a good basic training in the structure of the body, the arterial structure, the places where people were likely to get wounded, men were likely to be wounded, and what to do, you know, to stop arterial bleeding, etc., etc.
So how long did this medical class go on for?
As I remember, it went on for, must be two to three months.
Now, you mentioned a test. Could you give us a description of the test you then had?
Yes, they assembled on the square, the drill square. They assembled some 30 or to 40 simulated casualties. They're lying all over the place on the gravel, and on each man was a ticket, and on it were war injuries were described. And each of the squads of six men were assigned to a particular casualty. And I had a particularly bad one. It was a compound fracture of the femur, that's the thigh bone, with arterial bleeding from the femoral artery. And he also had a compound fracture of the humerus, which is the upper arm bone of the upper arm, with a bleeding from the brachial artery, which is the artery there. So I had a very, very tough assignment.
What would you do then in that case? What did you do?
Well, in that case, the first thing I did was to clap a tourniquet on the two arteries, you see, to stop the bleeding, which was the appropriate treatment in those days. And I put them on, and then, of course, dressed the simulated wounds with gauze and bandages, and made a splint of the man's rifle, and put him on a stretcher, and I got a little counter-extension of the femur, which we were taught was most important, to try and get a little counter-extension, because the ends of a broken leg, if when they're all sort of cracked, etc., are liable to overlap. And if they overlap, they're liable to damage nerves and arteries, you see. And so the object was to try and get a little separation of the ends of the bone by stretching. And I managed to do that using the bar of the stretcher and the man's rifle.
What did the soldier do during this?
He just laid inert. He just. When you mean the casualty? The casualty?
Yeah. How did they test what you'd done then?
Captain Benson, who was the head of the instruction class, came round every man, every squad, and I was the number one of the squad with this man, and he questioned me as to why, what I'd done, in the order in which I had done it, and why I had made these particular things, you see. In other words, what I had done was to put into practice what he and Sergeant Partridge had taught us in the class, you see. And he was very pleased.
You came topping.
And I was delighted to learn the next day that after he had marked all the squads, I came out top of the 40, 30 or 40. And the company officer, my company officer, Captain Locke, and Sergeant Major Robinson, Wet Robinson. I must break off here to tell you, we had two Sergeant Majors named Robinson in the depot. One was called Wet Robinson, and the other Dry Robinson, because the dry one was a teetotaler, and the wet one obviously wasn't. And he was delighted, my Sergeant Major. Well, Wet Robinson.
Was that the end of your formal medical training?
Yes, that was the end of the formal medical training, the going of that. From then on, I was posted to the depot staff on the police force, and like a red cap, you know, and until the war broke out.
We'll come to that. So when you joined the RAMC, the unit you were in was it A Company?
Yes, A Company. Royal Army Medical Corps Depot, Aldershot.
And how many companies had there been?
There were three companies, A, B and C.
And so when you left, when you were assigned to the police, the Red Caps, did you stay attached to A Company?
Oh yes, I was slept in the same bed, in the same barrack room.
Right. You were obviously very keen on your medical training.
Oh, very, most. Very keen on it. I was absorbed in the medical training, and I retained all the instruction that was given, and it was very good instruction. I retained it all.
How did you manage? Because you'd only had a restricted education. Was it pitched at a level that you could?
No, it didn't need to be, because although I had a restricted education, I was a voracious reader, and I was reading books far beyond my station and my age. When I was very young, so I mean, my knowledge of the English language was probably as good or better than many much better educated boys, you see.
Did all the class enjoy their training and their?
Well, it depended, you see. We were a mixed bunch. There were some like myself who obviously enjoyed it, others who didn't take the same interest. It was a mixed bunch, the usual mixed bunch that one gets in a class, you know.
I'd like now to look at the conditions of service you were under. Could you tell me a little about the barracks you were in?
Yes, we were in MacGregor Barracks. We slept on what we call biscuit beds, three hard biscuits, and sheets that were like the coarsest of linen sheets and blankets. It was hard lying.
How many were in a barrack?
About 40.
Were you all trainees, or would you have a
all,
sergeant?
Nearly all recruits, because the only non-recruits in the barrack room were the people on the depot staff. All the us recruits, you see. It was after the 6 months preliminary training, recruits were passed out and assigned to stations all over the world. You see? And there was a constant inflow of recruits.